on how people can get involved in the work that Citizens Against UFO Secrecy is doing, CAUSE. And right now we have no membership organization. There are only six people in CAUSE, including myself. The Freedom of Information Act is free to the public, but when you enter into courts, it cost us $27,000 for the CIA suit and close to $18,000 for the NSA suit. We raised that funds by our newsletter that CAUSE puts out, which is called Just CAUSE. It deals strictly with government cover-up and the UFO. And if anybody is interested in obtaining the news bulletin, that's $10 for a quarterly bulletin, and they can write to Just CAUSE, P.O. Box 218, Coventry, Connecticut, 06238. And let's go on with the show, Beth.
All right. And we took all that information down. We'll pass it on to lovely Lita Mack and broadcast information here in case you missed it, and she'll get it on to you. Okay, back to our callers. We have Paula on the line. Paula, thank you for waiting.
Oh, thank you. Hello?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I've been interested in this for quite a while because, well, let me explain how this thing started. Okay, I met a guy in Long Beach, and his name is Unc, and he communicates with the small creek, you know, the small ones,
mm-hmm.
for years and years. Okay, it all started when he was on a farm when he was a little boy, and he communicates with them. Okay, when I met him, I didn't know anything about it, really. You know, I was always interested in it, but I didn't know. And he told me, would you like to meet them? I said, yeah. He said, well, you're going to see something that's going to scare you to death. That's how it started, okay. So if I was by myself, I don't think anybody would have believed me that I was in this apartment, in my apartment with my second husband, and we were in the room, and this big light came in the room, you know, and it just went right through the ceiling. There was no ceiling there, nothing. And it stayed in the room for a long time. And I said, my God, what's this? You know, we just thought all kinds of things. So, the next day, we put two and two together, went over to Unc's. And he said, yeah, those were my friends. He says, I said, well, what were they doing? He said, well, they were just saying hello. It's a good sign. But when they came through the window, it felt like the window cracked, you know, and like glass was all over me. That's how it felt, you know. So he was a witness on it, too. Okay.
All you saw was lights?
Yeah, all we saw was a big, enormous light. And it was a light that I didn't know what it was. I thought, you know, I thought it was the end of the world or an atom bomb exploded or something. But this big light just stayed in the room, you know.
A white light, red light?
Yeah, it was a big white light. And it was a real good feeling, you know, light. But after that, my eyes burnt for a long time. Okay, then. It was probably after I left the state and everything, and I came back, and I met this guy next door, Gerard Pernard. He's an actor.
Okay,
he's an actor.
I want you to speed this story up, Paula. We got a lot of calls.
Okay, Gerard Pernard, he's an actor. He said that he met a girl. She gave him a piece of paper. She said, hello, I'm from outer space. Him and his three friends were planning to go to Las Vegas. Okay, they went to Las Vegas. They went to the house where the address was. They thought they were going to go to a party. They said when we got there, it was an empty house. There was a spaceship there. Okay.
A spaceship?
Yeah. He went on the spaceship. There was a guy standing there. He said, hello, Gerard. We've been expecting you an hour ago. He went on the spaceship. They were there for 3 days and three nights. And I said, well, what did you eat? He said, there's no need to eat there. So he told me, Paula, you got to go read some of the books and see what those lights are. A lot of people have had them on them.
You believe the story, Paul?
I definitely believe the story. They're people that, you know, they're sane people, you know. I mean, a lot of people know this person, you know. Okay, so he went on the spaceship, and they told him that he would be here for some time, and that we are here on this earth to learn discipline. And they showed him different planets, explained to them where they came, and they explained to them that we're the only solar system in the whole universe that doesn't travel in space. And he says that the reason why they don't appear to people is not because of mass hysteria. It's because it's against their constitution. They believe that the whole earth must be united and want them willingly to come. And they willingly would like to come here to help dispose of a nuclear. That's what they said, you know. Okay, so that one, I was scared. That light had scared me for about a year, you know. And then after that, I went to Washington State, where I met an Indian friend of mine from South Dakota. And he said, yeah, I see him out there in the Indian land, you know, Black Hills over there where he lives. And he told me, I see him out there, but they come out and they land their ships. But you can't get anywhere near him because of those lights. But he said, the same thing happened to me. I was in this room and this light came in the whole bit. Okay, so this went on. Then I met another lady who was an Indian lady, and the spaceship had landed there. And I don't really know who to tell the stories to, you know. So this little girl came to my door. I didn't even know who she was. And she said, can I spend the night at your house? Because I'm scared, me and my sisters and spaceships and all this. So I said, all right, come in. She was acting strange. You know, those lights put you on a strange, you know, kind of, you know, speed deal, you know. So she came in and she was asking me to eat all kinds of things. I fed that girl about 10 times straight, you know. And I said, well, okay. So I walked her home the next day. I said, I'm going to talk to your mom. So I walked her home, I talked to her grandma, she said, ask my family, it's true. So I walked her over this bridge, over this river. Oh, this river is kind of a long walk. I walked her over the river and got to her house, and I said, her whole family was there, a very nice family, the whole bunch was there. Her grandma had long braids, she was a real old lady.
Paula, kind of speed the story up, would you?
Okay, I'm trying to speed it up. Okay, well, anyways, I can give you an address of a lady who's trying to get the rest of her husband's story published. And she's a very nice lady, and anyone who's really interested in this can go to her house, Elta Standing Horse, 27401 Highway 74, Paris. And if you call her...
Why don't you send me that information in a letter? We'll try to follow up.
Well, you can go to her house. She's trying to get someone to help publish the rest of her husband's book.
Okay.
Her husband had a Christian Bible school. He's Indian. And he's been to Venus, Mars, all over the place. And they're very nice outer space people. He's been in their ship. He's been all over. And I asked her, well, why didn't you go on the spaceship? She said to me, because they said that he was a good Christian man. That's why they brought him up.
Larry, would you like to meet this guy?
They live in a different sphere than us.
Mm-hmm.
They did not transgress like we did. They believe in the Bible. They have Ten Commandments, the whole bit. But they said they did not transgress like we did.
Okay.
And that we're on a different sphere than they are.
Okay.
That's what they explain, you know. But I wish the people would get together and listen to them, you know, because they know... They can help us in a lot of ways. They're not here after our water. They don't need our water. They have all kinds of stuff up there.
Okay,
but if
Paula,
you go to this woman's home...
Paula.
Yeah?
Come on. This
I'm just
could go
trying
on.
To explain.
For,
okay,
know.
The
what
last
I want you to do is send me... I want that.
I met a little girl. This is my brother, my... Okay,
Paula.
Yeah.
I've got a bunch of other callers. I want you to send me the name and address of your friend.
Yeah.
We'll
anyone can go there and listen to the whole tapes. And,
yeah, we'll try to buy...
She's even seen them. They come to her door, knocked at night, and she says the only thing unusual about these men.
Okay, Paula, I'm going to have...
Their hooked to their boots.
I'm going to have to let you go now, Paula, but we appreciate you sharing
Well, I'm just going to say that I got friends that communicate with them.
That's
and,
good.
And it's really interesting stories. I can tell you a lot more, but I don't know, you know.
Yeah, we're running short of time with you there.
And I know another little girl it happened to her, too.
Okay, Paula, I'm going to have to let you go on this one. I can see this will go on forever.
Okay.
All right, thank you, honey.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. We're 19 minutes past 11 o'clock. I don't know how to respond to all of that. Do you, Larry?
No, other than I can parallel with sightings on Indian reservations. In the Yakima Indian Reservation in Washington, they see lights up there quite frequently. You know, they have what they call fire towers, which are manned by the Indians themselves. And we've got hundreds and hundreds of reports of Indians seeing lights coming in and out of the wooded area, landing and then taking off again.
Well, yeah, they do happen up there.
Yes.
I hope Paula will send me the name and address of the lady, and we'll follow through upon that. Bob Monroe, who's best known for his book Journeys Out of the Bible, published nationwide, will be live here in studio. Monroe Institute of Applied Sciences, Journeys Out of the Body. And he's promised to get me out of the body when it gets to town. The week following that will be an extremely exciting week for us because Tom Bearden will be here live and in person, along with John Bedini and Steve Wirth, and we will talk about that amazing and exotic new world of free energy that those gentlemen have concocted, which will indeed change the world. And let's go on to our callers. We have Gary here. Gary, you want to know about the men in black? There are some horror stories about that, you know.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'll make it a real quick question if I can.
Paula took up a lot of time there.
There have been some very, very good witnesses that have come forward and made quite a few statements about what they have seen. And then subsequently in time, these people all of a sudden just kind of shut up. And then other investigators got into what they were saying, and they found out that people had approached them and told them either in a very quiet, nice way or a very threatening way that they're going to either shut their mouth or, you know, whatever. And has there been any recent dealings with this type of thing, or what do you speculate is going on? Is it either with the United States, or could it possibly be an extraterrestrial?
talking about the MIBs.
The Men in Blacks, yes.
Yeah. Well, it's always been thought that the MIBs had a connection with the intelligence agencies, that they were the intelligence agencies trying to silence the good UFO witnesses, if you will. I have never personally ran into the MIBs myself, but I have run into the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and my researchers have when we attempted to get some documentation out of the government where my people had been visited by the FBI and threatened with treason, the Treason Act, and everything else you can think of to silence my investigators into trying to get documentation out of the government.
They would, the FBI would threaten treason charges if they were obeying the law, trying to get information through the Freedom of Information?
Well, we had turned up a specific case that occurred off the coast of Cuba in 1969. Information came to us from an NSA listening post off the coast of Florida. And when we tried to obtain the information on the case, we started to penetrate the case, if you will, and we're getting information when all of a sudden we were visited by the FBI and threatened with the violation of the Treason Act, if you will, and to try to stop my investigator from probing into that case.
Is there any possible litigation that could be taken on the United States government to stop these types of acts?
Well, that's one of the things we're attempting to do, is to stop the ridicule, harassment, and get the facts out to the public. I mean, let them know that UFOs are real. The evidence is there within their own files. We've uncovered it. It's there, and they're withholding that the phenomena from you.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Have
all right, Gary, thank you for your question there. And Paul is on the line. Paul?
Yes. Good evening, Larry, and good evening, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Bill, when you haven't spoke up on having a problem hearing all of
that. Could you speak up a little bit there?
Yeah. First, I wish to correct him on his statement about the Cubans, and that was 1967.
Yes, 67, I'm sorry.
Next, I would like to ask him concerning the epilogue portion of the book, concerning the Paul Benowitz case. I checked out the name of his company and found it to be Thunder Scientific Laboratories.
That's correct.
But he was not listed as a doctor. Others in the book that I looked this up in showed other people, companies, how many professionals they had and so forth. Secondly, I'd like to get into that case. What has he found out currently concerning Benowitz? In line with that same thing, there's a case in his book he mentions about Miller. Now, I know I'm a GS-15 with certain types of clearances in certain sensitive agencies. It's necessary that you get congressional approval to get a GS-15. So is Mr. Miller, I won't refer to his first name because I don't remember it right offhand, but in the book he mentions about Miller being impartial toward investigations, having been with Blue Book previously and was one of the best investigators, impartially that is, in the subject matter. Benowitz case, I wanted to also talk about the CR-44 material. Now, you people use acronyms in that book, but you don't define what they mean. Is CR-44, is that carbon radioactive? Is that chromium? What are we talking about?
Okay, I can hardly hear him, but I think he's asking what HQCR-44
is. And I'd like to know what your current status is on the Benowitz case.
Okay, the Benowitz case is still going forward. Dr. Bruce McAbee is doing some heavy work into that case. He's been out to Kirkland Air Force Base several visits and has had long, lengthy conversations with Benowitz and the people involved in that case. We have turned another document on that case, which comes from OSI, Air Force OSI on the case. We were unaware that Dr. Paul Benowitz had turned over films to OSI, if you will. When we talked to him and asked him about that, he said, no, I never gave the photographs that I had of that I took of the objects coming in and out of the Kirkland. All I did was go down to the base for a bunch of officers, some high-ranking officers, if you read the book, and showed my films. I never turned them over. We now have a document that shows that the Air Force, some way, had obtained Dr. Benowitz's films and done an analysis on them, and have depicted the objects in there as being genuine, unidentified flying objects.
He also wanted to know what the acronym meant there.
HUCR-44. Yes, when we filed Freedom of Information Act requests on that, they told us that it dealt with nuclear material.
Nuclear material for you, Paul.
Okay, now what's this doctored in the film? What sort of recording devices did he use? I mean, how valid is the recorded information that he has obtained?
I can't hear him, but...
He wanted to know what kind of recording devices were used and how valid was that information.
Okay, that, he had, what do they call them? I can't think of it off the top of my head now. Motion detectors, infrared detectors, he had something to do with propulsion. I can't remember them all now. If Benowitz is very easy to reach by writing Thunder Laboratories, in New Mexico there, and if you write him and ask him, he'll send you exactly what he used in his investigation on that case.
What's this doctored in? No. Okay.
No, I don't know.
You don't know. Okay, thank you very much.
Why don't you give Benowitz, drop him a line there, the laboratories, and he's pretty open about it.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call. Mary, you've been waiting a long time. Hello?
Hello.
Oh, is that Marv? Excuse me. I'm not wearing my glasses. It looks like a Mary from here, but it is Marv. Marv, welcome aboard. Hello, Marv. Hello.
Maybe. Harry, can you hear me okay?
There, I had you punched out, so I've got to punch back in. My fingers are not what we would call expert here. Go ahead.
Okay. I have a comment and then a question. I wrote a term paper back in college days in reference. It's been about 15, 20 years ago. And I was astonished as to how much information there is throughout the various libraries. And, well, they actually covered the Betty and Barney Hill case, et cetera, even somewhere in Ohio where a UFO was supposed to land in the backyard, and the occupant handed the owner of the home, I guess small town, buckwheat pancakes, and I guess in return for using the water hose. So I corroborate what you said about needing water. And the other comment, the question is, they covered a lot of information about Donald Fry, who had a top secret clearance with the Air Force at that time. Do you know his whereabouts now?
Donald Fry? No, I don't.
Yes, I do. Don's in, I believe it's Albuquerque. He was a guest on the show about 9 months ago. He's doing fine.
I had two of the highest security clearances quite a few years ago when I was in the service. And it was rather unusual for him to report incidents like that, and they wouldn't pull their security clearance from him. Whereas I know that, you know, people working around me were involved with minor incidents, and they pull theirs, you know. So they're sort of convinced me that, you know, there must be something, you know.
Well, Donald Fry certainly thinks there is. He's had a number of experiences, and
They covered the remote saucer where he rode back to New York and back within seconds, I guess.
It didn't take him long.
Yeah.
Okay, Mark.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much for your call.
Interesting about the water thing that we came up with the communication between our government and an extraterrestrial civilization and the exchanging of technology for water. And we later found out that the gentleman brought up the Benowitz case. When we turned the document, there was a mention to something called Project Aquarius in it. Now, when we began filing Freedom of Information Act requests on that coded Project Aquarius, we not only filed Freedom of Information Act requests, we filed Privacy Act requests, which gave us access to all interdepartment memos that were being passed on our request. And we were getting back documents which were saying we believe that Kaws was in possession of top secret material. Aquarius, as you know, in the zodiac sign, is the sign for water.
Mm-hmm.
We found some interesting things through the news media, is that when Albert Einstein, years ago when he was living, was at a press conference at one time, and somebody brought up the subject of UFOs and asked him why would extraterrestrials be coming here. what would they be coming here for? And Einstein's response was they would be coming for water. And when they questioned him and said, why water? He says, because this is the only planet within this galaxy that has water.
Well, that's saying a lot. In this galaxy, we know that it's certainly the most water-laden planet in the solar system.
Mm-hmm.
Although there are geysers of water on Mars, we have photographs of those.
Mm-hmm.
It is interesting, too. I recall on that very first show I did, one of the guests was Bill Herman. You know Bill?
No, I don't.
Of him in South Carolina, who claims to be a contactee with a group of the little people who claim to be, or has told them they're from Zeta 1, Zeta 2 Reticuli. And one of the reasons that they came to this planet in the first place was to study our water, which seemed to be heavier than theirs, even though it was H2O.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So water keeps cropping up.
Yeah, water does keep cropping up.
Ron, you're on.
Yes, I'm very grateful for gentlemen like you.
Thank you.
Larry, I'd like to direct a question to you. I have heard from other sources as well that we do have alien beings who have died, either frozen or preserved somehow.
Yes.
And I would presume that they've obviously have done autopsies or biological analysis on the blood type, the organs and the heart functions or vascular systems and things like that. Have they done such things? And if they have, what were the results?
Okay, I don't specialize in that area. A gentleman by the name of Len Stringfield does.
Yes, Len has been on the show a couple of times, and he has three papers that are published, and I think the autopsy reports are in paper number two.
That's correct, yes. We do know that they have no reproduction systems as we know them, which would kind of tend to what I was saying before, that they look like clones almost, you know, brother and sister and so forth, with no external genitalia, if you will.
Well, it was mentioned earlier that there had been two sightings of female types, and I was also it struck my interest of how were they identified as being female, but are these again of a different species or type?
Well, the case in Brazil, the female was very humanoid, like you and I.
I see.
And indeed forced a sexual act upon the young man.
Uh-huh.
So she obviously had genitalia.
Yeah, they were more humanoid-type creatures that were involved in that case. The incidences that Len Stringfield talks about deal with the small individual with the very large head and so forth. He has got testimony from the person who performed the autopsy while in the service on one of the beings.
Plus mm-hmm. photographs.
Yes, plus the photographs.
And again, I guess these are not available to the public, or at least readily available.
Well, you'd have to contact Len Stringfield. Like I said, they're in his possession and not mm-hmm. mine, and he would be the ones to try to get them off of.
Okay, I have one other question here I'd like to ask you. Have you ever heard of a man called Townsend Brown? He worked with what he called a device called a gravitator. Now, I'm slightly changing the subject here in the fact that our government is trying so hard to find other ways of defying gravity, such as through rocketry and so on. Townsend Brown had developed he had noticed an effect through a Coolidge tube, which was an X-ray tube, very primitive type, around 1922. And he had found when laying on a scale, when it was activated with voltage, it would change its weight. And he pursued it further and had developed a flying disc with a dielectric field, or the dielectric material of some sort. And he had continued on pretty much on his own and up to about 1953. And our government apparently had no interest. He went to France and the Aeronautical Society in France. And they initially showed interest and then for some strange reason decided it was not worth pursuing. And as a result, he exhausted his own personal funds and could no longer get government funds. Have you heard of the man?
The name is familiar, and I'm partially familiar with some of the work.
Yeah, he's from Ohio originally. I think he's now in Northern California somewhere, if he's still alive. He was born, I think, around 1905. And I just wonder if he didn't, you know, wasn't kind of on the verge of discovering what we're trying to discover now.
Uh-huh. Could possibly be.
Possibly, that is very close. We made some great scientific advances in this field around the turn of the century,
mm-hmm.
which were immediately squashed by Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
And we're now turning all of the work of J.P. Morgan around.
Yeah, well, now, he peaked out in his I mean, he was actually just exhausted, you know, financially and mentally around 1953. And I think that's the Roswell incident. Wasn't that around in that period of time also?
The Roswell incident?
Oh, 47. Okay, all right, yeah.
It's interesting that we've been experimenting with different means of... for.
You're fading out. I can barely hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's interesting that our government, not only our government, but other governments are experimenting with other sources of energy for means of propulsion.
Mm-hmm.
We had turned a document from Canada which involved the Canadian project called Project Magnet, which was the Department of Transportation in Canada was experimenting with the magnetic fields of the Earth to try to find a means of propulsion out of it. And we turned a document which was sent by the senior radio engineer Wilbur Smith to the Canadian government. The project that he was working on was on the collapse of the Earth's magnetic field as a source of energy. And it was believed that UFOs, according to the document, this is what Smith's document states, that he believed that UFOs were operating on magnetic principles. Smith sent a memo on November 21st, 1950, and it was forwarded to the controller of the telecommunications, and the matter of flying saucers came up, and he says, and I'll quote from the document, "I made a discreet inquiry to the Canadian embassy staff in Washington, who were able to obtain from me the following information. A, the matter is the most highly classified subject in the United States government, rating higher even than the H-bomb. B, two flying saucers exist. C, their modus operandi is unknown, but a concentrated effort is being made by a small group of scientists headed by Dr. Vannevar Bush. The entire matter is considered by the United States authorities to be that of tremendous significance. Smith's memo itself was classified top secret." So you see, the Canadian government was working on the magnetic principles at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Does that help you, Ron?
Well, yeah, it is some help. I just might give a footnote here that Townsend Brown, his biggest problem was that he required very high voltages and wattages, like 100 kilowatts with his first working model, and later he had a 17-foot, I'm sorry, about a 2-foot disc that was flying in a circle 17 feet per second. However, it had to be tethered by a 20-foot power line, you might say, or power cord, because of the tremendous power source that was required, and he just couldn't seem to overcome the a more compact or lighter type of energy source. But he apparently, and I very much would like to follow up on this, if there's patents or something that's substantial, but it seemed like he just couldn't overcome that energy package that he required.
Well, that's being overcome, the energy package. We'll get into that in 2 weeks. I want you to be listening when John Bedini is here.
Oh, I will. I'll be looking forward to that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Ron.
Good night.
You. And we have Dick on the line. Dick?
Oh, boy. I've been waiting. Let me say something here.
Okay.
If they took a poll and they want to know what show I thought in all of this county L.A. area, on all talk radio, all these stations, you know what I'd say? Bill Jenkins and the Open Mind Show.
Oh, well, thank
now,
you very much.
I want to get other people's chance to say, so I'm going to get all this 30 years and condense it into a couple of questions here for Larry. And one of them, it's very important to my life because I was in San Marcos, Texas back in 1952.
Well, I was in Lampasas, Texas. That wasn't too far away.
I'm not sure that you're not a Bill Jenkins that was in that I know from the service, but we'll get into that another time.
No, I missed the service.
Huh?
I missed the service.
Oh, okay, well, anyway.
That's as close as I got.
Let me get to my question here on the highway. I forget which one it was between San Marcos to Lockhart to Seguin. I think Larry will know this area I'm talking about. Over the years, since what happened to me that night, and this was the first 2 weeks of October 1952. Matter of fact, specifically, if you can pinpoint it for me, the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th. And what happened in my life was the worst thing that could have happened in my life at that time. And then has led me into the same sphere of thinking and everything. In other words, I don't believe in death. I believe in the life here. I believe in a lot of things. I now come to believe and think that the blinding light that blinded me and caused me to go over a cliff and lose my first wife in an accident, and the fact that the person that was from the local newspaper was only 5 minutes behind me coming up the road and then saw nobody, saw nothing, there's only one thing I can think of that it could possibly be, that there was nobody that was there other than something that swooped down and came at me. And then the rest of the story is also explains itself. And that's what I'm trying to find out. If you may have any information or knowledge of sightings in the Seguin, Lockhart, or Fairmark, and that along that strip there.
In 1952.
Back in 1952. Then I have a little comment on the beings that I've had an experience in 1974, right in Hollywood. But I'll hear the answer to that. Or wait a minute, I'll get off the station and let you give the answer to that.
Before you get off.